This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, a conversation with Lisa Daugherty, the president and CEO of Lake Area United Way. They are honoring their volunteers and other community-based employees for their work this year at the annual Star Awards coming up soon. We'll find out the latest. Also, we'll talk with Sandy Alvarez of the Center of Workforce Innovations and Kevin Comerford with Construction Advancement Foundation. They are planning the very first annual Northwest Indiana Construction and Skilled Trades Day tomorrow to be held in Crown Point. Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Chris Nolte. The Lake Area United Way is getting ready to honor those volunteers and community-based employees for their work in 2017 and making a difference here in Lake County with the second annual STAR Awards. STAR stands for Serving Together Achieves Results. I talk with Lisa Daugherty, the president and CEO of Lake Area United Way, about the event and how things are going this year in a time of change for the local United Way.
The purpose behind the event is to recognize organizations, initiative volunteers that are doing some really special work in the community and may not necessarily be recognized, you know, at this point.
When you have a program like this and so many people, so many volunteers that in so many different areas that have helped out the United Way and the programs and the like here, how do you organize such a program like this and the awards in particular?
Well, that's why we rely so heavily on the nominations from the organizations that are out there serving the public directly, you know, or perhaps the public themselves. We announced the second year probably within the last week or two, and right now we're accepting nominations through the 19th, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And there are some key awards both for organizations and for the individuals that are behind the work.
Okay. I know that there's a big concern that there really aren't a lot of opportunities that nonprofits and other related organizations have to be able to come together. And this is it sounds like it's a kind of a presentation, a program that you get to probably really the only time once of its kind that you get to do this site.
That's correct. I think a lot of organizations recognize their own, you know, the volunteers that they have for their own specific organization or program, but we're bringing about 100 nonprofits, faith-based organizations together in one place so that we can recognize all these individuals that are out in the community together helping people. And it's going to be at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts. We actually outgrew our facility last year. Mm-hmm. Last year was the first year. We had more than 100 people that attended. We outgrew that facility, so we're moving over to the center, so we can actually double our capacity if we need to.
Now, just as a point of reference, where have the Star Award program been held in the past?
We held it at the South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority, which is a great partner. I think that most nonprofits would agree. Spiro and his team are phenomenal to work with, and it was a perfect setting. We actually host a lot of our events there. It was a perfect setting for this, but we just have so many people that are interested in coming.
So you're talking about the facilities there at the Indiana Visitor Center.
Correct.
There in Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, the Welcome Center.
Okay. Obviously, you can't have a program like this without having local companies and other organizations, not only supporters financially, but other people that are doing their part to make this thing happen together. Tell us about the local companies and how they get to show their part in these Star Awards.
Are you talking about the funders, the sponsors?
Yeah, everybody that's involved, like the funders and all those people.
Sure.
Too. Sure, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we've got some key organizations that are supporting this, making it possible for us, of course, because everything that we do, we have to raise, you know, the support for. NIPSCO, ArcelorMittal, First Financial are the organizations that are providing the support for this. And, of course, you know, we have so many relationships with other organizations out in the community. Last year, Peace Baptist Church, Munster Church, Mental Health America, Salvation Army, the Northwest Indiana Veterans Action Council, Habitat for Humanity, Meals on Wheels, just to name a few.
Yeah.
And when you hear the stories about what some of their volunteers are being recognized for, it's really impressive. I don't know how these folks find time to do all that they do.
Now, looking ahead to the awards for this year, I'm sure there will probably be some surprises, or so we can't really give away who's going to be honored, but are there some organizations that already know that they're getting awards, or some of their people are going to get awards?
Yeah, well, we're actually still receiving the nominations.
Oh, so you don't...
So
it's going to be a real surprise right down to to the day of the event.
It absolutely will. You know, there's one... new award that we have this year. Actually, it was an idea that Mike Schneider with First Financial Bank had. He had been working with an individual with disabilities. They were volunteering for the Humane Society with Mike, and he was so impressed. He suggested that we have a special award for those folks with special needs that are doing volunteering. And
that's
so
great.
We're launching that this year. It's called the Mega Star Award.
Wow.
And it'll go to an individual who has a disability or, you know, special needs, but they're out in the community serving others.
So, and to find out who, well, you just have to be involved in the award ceremony, come to the event and find out what's happening there too. We're talking with Lisa Daugherty, who is the president and CEO of the Lake Area United Way. They're based in Highland and Griffith area. And besides this big event of the Star Awards coming up here in December, the United Way is busy with a lot of other projects. But I think most notably, and maybe many people are not aware of this, there's been a major change in how the United Way, and this is, I understand, not just local, it's nationwide. They've taken a turn to basically change the paradigm, shift the paradigm, literally, from how the United Way has been handling working with organizations and groups across the spectrum, all kinds of organizations and groups, to focusing more specifically on certain areas. Tell us about the change and what that means for the Lake Area United Way.
Sure. Let me just take a few seconds to remind everybody that may not recall, you know, part of the reason for the shift there is twofold. Mm-hmm. One, United Ways enjoyed a lot of exclusivity around fundraising in the past. They relied on United Way to help them understand the needs and make those decisions about where funding went. People are far more savvy now. We're not exclusive. So we have seen some declines in our campaign. So we've needed to diversify. The other primary reason behind it is that we weren't seeing community conditions change despite the investment in it.
Mm-hmm.
So our United Way, like many others, made a decision to focus in on a single issue that was affecting our county, individual county.
Right.
Now, we did a lot of research and landed ultimately on struggling working families. And there's a United Way acronym for that called ALICE. It stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. These are folks that are working hard, and in some cases, many cases, multiple jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But the cost of living is high here. And despite working hard, they're not able to afford the basic necessities. And we've got about 1 in 4 families right now in our county, in Lake County alone, that are struggling. Now, these are families above those. We've got about a 16-17% level of poverty in our county.
Right.
Another 25 that we consider ALICE, that are really struggling despite working hard.
And I'm sure these are people that obviously... they have to rely on help from organizations and from governments too, I suppose. At that point, we're talking in this case of like the township trustees offices and other related community service organizations that are governmental run. In addition to that, they still have to have extra help. What does the Lake Area United Way program have this year, working with ALICE, use this to talk about these folks that are most in need? What programs are set up now, and how are these programs doing?
Well, they're doing great. You know, we're actually still in our discovery, you know, research phase. We just finished talking to about 100 ALICE families. We've convened employers so that we can talk about how some of the obstacles that ALICE families typically experience are impacting, you know, work performance. Things like reliable transportation. We don't have a regional public transportation system here. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these families struggle. You know, owning a car is expensive. The insurance, the gas, childcare. A lot of these families are challenged with access to affordable, safe childcare. So all this is going to affect, you know, employment ultimately, because if they don't have a reliable alternative, folks have to miss work. So we're still in a phase where we're really trying to understand how these obstacles are impacting families. And you mentioned the township. We are, for the first time in our work over the years, working with organizations in other sectors. So we're coming together. So collectively, we'll be able to identify the strategies that we can incorporate to make a difference in for the entire population, not just a few families at a time. But right now, we've got a number of programs that folks can take advantage of. We've got a prescription discount program called FamilyWise. We're out working with a coalition of banks. The coalition is called Bank On, Northwest Indiana, where they're offering products, you know, to families. We've got a lot of families that are underbanked or not banked, you know, unbanked.
Right.
And so these products help bring them into a good, you know, banking program, so they're not relying on some of those detrimental short-term solutions, you know, like credit cards.
The payday loans and the credit cards, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. You know, and in the long run, I mean, it can have a very detrimental, you know, impact. There are community health organizations that are available for these families to tap into. So we're working to get them connected. We're actually developing an app called Resource Roundup that's going to be launching after the first of the year. That will allow families on their mobile device to put information about themselves, you know, their profile, their community, and actually have information provided that tells them where they can access different services, whether it be, utility assistance, transportation, childcare, et cetera.
Right.
All
now,
in one place.
Now, what's the timetable for this? Since these things apparently are in progress here, is there a deadline that you would like, or maybe a timetable with an optimal time that you'd like to have these programs ready for people to use?
Well, yeah. You know, that's the big challenge, because the change that we're talking about is we've got a 10-year plan. And so what we intend to do is identify short-term strategies for next year that will allow families some immediate access. We're talking about a grant, we're calling it the Hand Up Grant, that will allow ALICE families to access some help with, you know, utilities. We've got a new program it's a Safety Net Express, where we're partnering with Catholic Charities that's gonna make assistance available. One of the things that we discovered with ALICE families is that even if they know about a system of support, they can't always access it because they're working and the hours aren't necessarily, you know, conducive to their schedule. So we're going to partner with Catholic Charities and some partner agencies like the Boys and Girls Club, as an example, in Hammond, to offer a time on a Saturday where these families can go and register to see if they're eligible for some of that assistance. So some of it isn't necessarily changing what's offered out there. Mm-hmm. It's changing when and where it's offered so that families can more easily access that support.
Now that you're still really in the process of developing all of these programs or getting them started, have you gotten any feedback or any reaction from any people as to how things are working? The entire concept of making the big change for the United Way here in Lake County is actually making a benefits.
Absolutely, and it's been very well received. The partner agencies, you know, when we announced this transition, we brought them along with us, and they have been phenomenal in helping us understand the ALICE family experience. They've helped us convene the families that we're talking to, you know, as part of our research. When we do have something to offer the families, like this past Saturday. Ken Allen very generously donated 1,000 turkey meals.
That's right.
Across Lake and Porter County. Well, our partner agencies that are at the table with us in our United for Families network, they're the ones that helped us promote those turkey meals to the families so that we could get the word out effectively and get people. And the turkeys were gone by the end of the day.
That's great. Does that mean that in many cases that these folks, and as the programs continue on with Lake Erie United Way, that they're going to feel a little more comfortable going into the stressful time of the holidays?
Absolutely. That's certainly, there's no question that Alice families feel a lot of stress in a lot of ways. Access to mental health care is something that has come up in our research. So we've also got a Santa's workshop coming up in December, December 9th, at the YMCA in Griffith, where we're trying to ease the burden for families by giving them an opportunity to come in and shop. There's a small contribution that they have to make, but they can pick up gifts for their kids. Have them wrapped right then and there. The kids get to meet Santa. They're fed a meal. They get to do arts and crafts while the parents, quote-unquote, shop. And then they're all set for Christmas.
That's Lisa Daugherty, who's the president and CEO of Lake Erie United Way, about the upcoming Star Awards happening on December 5th in Munster, and about the programs offered by the organization that help residents and families in Lake County. Oh, by the way, today is the deadline for the nominations for this year's Star Awards. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. It's not been long ago that Governor Eric Holcomb had told people that he is most concerned about making sure that there are plenty of jobs for Hoosiers in the future. And a lot of that involves not only the jobs in skilled trades and the manufacturing jobs and the high-tech jobs, but also construction and skilled trades as well, too. It's all part of how the workforce of the future in Indiana can shape up. And that is why they're going to have the first annual Northwest Indiana Construction and Skilled Trades Day coming up on November 28th here in Northwest Indiana. It's a program that is being sponsored jointly by the Center of Workforce Innovations, as well as CAF, which stands for Construction Advancement Foundation. And we have with us today Sandy Alvarez, who is with the Center of Workforce Innovations, and Kevin Comerford, who is with CAF. And thank you both for being with us on Regionally Speaking today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Well, first, if you will, give an opportunity for folks who are not familiar with your organizations briefly to tell us what each organization does and how it all fits in together with planning for such an important day where young people and the public in general as well, too, will have an opportunity to learn more about these trades and these apprenticeship programs.
Well, the Center of Workforce Innovations actually is partially staffed to the Workforce Board here in Northwest Indiana. And we are responsible for making sure that we're responsive to industry. So when we look at the construction and trades industry, we work closely with the organizations that work with the trades, and we ensure that we have a pipeline of workers. So when we work with our schools in Northwest Indiana, we are constantly at the ready of ensuring that the schools know about the skills that are required, the career pathways that are involved, and we collaborate on making sure that the students can get into these manufacturing companies, healthcare facilities, and into the construction and trades apprenticeship programs. We want them to know about the entrance requirements, the skills required, and any coursework that they can possibly do prior to their graduation. This is all very important work that we do, and it's great to have the Construction Advancement Foundation with us as we can innovatively work together.
Okay, Kevin, tell us about the foundation and how it fits into all this, please.
Yeah, the Construction Advancement Foundation of Northwest Indiana is a regional construction contractor trade association. We have over 500 affiliated union contractors that are members of our organization. And our contractors primarily work in Lake, Porter, LaPorte, Newton, Jasper, and Stark counties. The mission of the CAF is to work on a broad range of programs that includes safety training, supervisory management training, and then workforce development. And that's kind of how this fits into that.
We note the Northwest Indiana workforce and the entire workplace, for that matter, is evolving. It's made the change from heavy industry into the high-tech industry, so to speak, but there's still always buildings that have to be put up for somebody. And that means you still have to have people trained, skilled, especially in the trades, to be able to put these buildings up or do the plumbing or do the electrical work, the heating, whatever it may happen to be, these skilled trades that are out there. And you have some people that are making the change in jobs. Maybe they did work in the steel mills, but they're still wanting to do something. They have, as you mentioned, the transferable skills are important to be able to go in any trade or any type of profession, for that matter. And how do programs like this one, in particular with the trades programs and the apprenticeship programs, seem to fit in so nicely with what you're offering on this particular day?
Well, I think what we've seen, you know, especially in the last decade, is that high schools are kind of, you know, have gotten away from, you know, doing the vocational training, and, you know, they're kind of pushing the college career path. So we just kind of want to let people know that, you know, these good-paying careers exist in the construction trades. We're kind of looking for people who are, you know, college-ready. I mean, because you're going to need math skills. You're going to need to have a great work ethic. You're going to need to have a great attitude. And these are the kinds of people that we're looking for.
These are sort of the same things, like you say, that you just have to get your high school diploma or to get your associate's degree or whatever it may happen to be. It doesn't seem to be any different, whether it's whether you're headed off to college for a four-year school or whether you're headed off to a specialized training, like in these particular programs, I guess.
12 of the different trades that exist, there's about 20 different trades that exist in the union construction industry. Mm-hmm. 12 of those trades actually offer a degree from Ivy Tech Community College upon successful completion of the apprenticeship program.
So you do actually get an associate's degree out of it. So that does it does count, and it also means that it puts you up, up the lake, I suppose, from just getting out of high school then.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but I mean, you're graduating debt-free. You're not going into debt. And you're going to have skills that you could take with you and transfer to anywhere in the country, really. You know, a lot of people that go through the program, you know, the construction industry is very a feast or famine. You know, when the economy is good, then everybody's work. But sometimes when the economy is a little slow around here, you know, these people could actually take these skills and go to other areas of the country,
right,
and apply them so they could always have work.
That's great. That's great. Let's take a few moments to talk about this first annual Northwest Indiana Construction and Skilled Trades Day, which is coming up on Tuesday, November 28th. It's made up, I guess, of two opportunities. The major part of the opportunity is for young people in the high school programs and related programs to come in to the Lake County Fairgrounds in Crown Point and get to see and talk to people. And then there's also a public component here, too. I'll see whether you, Kevin, or Sandy, if you want to talk a little bit of how the day is going to be broken up here, and so that citizens that are interested in this will have an opportunity to find out more, aside from the young people.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the program takes place November 28th. It's going to take place at the Lake County Fairgrounds in the Industrial Building. Mm-hmm. And the program will be from 8 to 4:30, but it's going to be closed to high schools only from 8 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
Then it will be open from the general public from 2 to 4:30. And then we have 13 different union trade apprenticeship training centers that are participating in the event. We also have the Indiana Plan that's going to be participating. They're kind of like a pre-apprenticeship training program that's designed to increase minority participation in the union construction trades. And basically the purpose of the event is to educate attendees on careers that exist in the trades. And then students will also have a chance to work with apprenticeship training instructors to perform hands-on training activities.
The Center of Workforce Innovations actually stepped into this in collaboration with the Construction Advancement Foundation. We were asked to promote it to all the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our work and initiative with Ready Northwest Indiana is a collaboration with 29 school systems in Northwest Indiana in all the seven counties that the Construction Advancement Foundation features as well. So we invited those school partners to register their students, and over 21 schools have already completed registration, allowing over 1,000 students to participate in this activity.
Wow.
That's we're great. Excited about that.
Yeah, you should be. That's great to have so many school districts involved in this and so many young people that are interested in finding out more about what the skilled trades and the careers of the future are going to be like. For these young people that show up for the biggest part of the day on the 28th, and they get to, I guess, go to various centers and talk to people, whether they have it set up in booth style there in the building to give everybody an opportunity to sit and talk to people and find out more?
When the bus pulls up, we'll have a full schedule for them. They'll actually be able to spend some quality time with each of the trades, focusing on three per group. We'll actually assist them in moving about the booth in order to get a full array of information from all of the trades that are there that day.
Now, how about the section towards the end of the day, from between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock, that gives the public an opportunity to learn more?
We're hoping that parents, other maybe school counselors or school personnel that are interested in learning more will avail themselves to coming in between the hours of 2 and 4:30, mm-hmm. as well as any of the general public that's just interested in what does the trades have to do, right, Kevin? I mean, we really want them to be a part of that as well.
Well, yeah, and you know, I would like to also add that, you know, if you cannot attend the event, we do have a website that we created in order to help people learn how to apply for these different trade careers. And that website, you could either just Google search We Build Northwest Indiana, or the URL is www.webuildnwi.com. And there people can find a whole array of information on the various careers that exist in the building and construction trades.
Once again, we're talking about the first annual Northwest Indiana Construction and Skilled Trades Day. It's going to come on Tuesday, November 28th. It starts in during much of the day, during the daylight hours, my morning, I should say, in particular, and until early afternoon, that it will be involving young people from the school districts in Northwest Indiana. And after that will be an opportunity for the public to come in. It's going to happen at the Lake County Fairgrounds in Crown Point, and you've given us a great website. We can find out more. Thanks for that information, too. If anybody has any questions in the meantime, they just refer to the website or give a call?
They can call the Construction Advancement Foundation and ask for me, Kevin Comerford. Mm-hmm. The phone number is 219-764-2883. And I'll be able to kind of guide them if they want to attend. I could tell them how they could join and mm-hmm. sign up. And if you're a school, you could call the Northwest Indiana Workforce Board and get a hold of Sandy. Sandy, do you want to provide your number?
Sure. My number is 219-462-2940, and I'm at extension 33.
That's Sandy Alvarez. Sandy is with the Center of Workforce Innovations. Kevin Comerford is with the organization called CAF, which is Construction Advancement Foundation. We're talking about this first annual Northwest Indiana Construction and Skilled Trades Day coming up on Tuesday the 28th. And as always, thank you very much for being with us to talk about the program, and looking forward to seeing more than 1,000 young people come in to the Lake County Fairgrounds and find out more about ways to become part of the workforce of the 21st century here in Lake County and all of Northwest Indiana. Thanks for being with us to talk about it.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate you bringing attention to the program.
Porter County Aging and Community Service Incorporated is helping eligible seniors sign up for 2018 Medicare benefits during the open enrollment period, which ends on December 7th. And here's Bruce Linder, the agency's executive director, to talk about the agency, its long and important history to the community, and the importance of getting help in trying to navigate the many changes in 2018's health insurance plans.
The agency has been around 60 years. It got started here in Valparaiso as an agency of volunteers to help people get to their doctor's appointments. So they were providing free services as volunteers, driving people around. Seniors still have that same big need today. Mm-hmm. It just has morphed into a larger organization. But driving is still, our busing is still our biggest program. It's 3/4 of our budget. Employs the most of our employees. We have 17 employees, and 13 of them are related to the transportation department. Transportation, like any other program it's government-funded. Transportation doesn't pay for itself. We charge $1 to the seniors, and people with disabilities ride for free. So if I don't get federal money, state money, and local money, we really don't have a transportation system. We're a door-to-door demand response service, so we don't drive around in a circle like like they do at the V-Line here in Valparaiso or the Gary Transit, where they have a route. We literally pick you up at your door, take you to your dialysis appointment, take you back home anywhere in Porter County. We have a couple of other programs, Section 8 housing. We supervise about 350 clients in Porter County, verifying that they're eligible to receive their voucher. That program runs through NWICA. We've been doing that for a long, long time. I've only been here for 12 years of the 60, so I can't speak to all of that, but I've got a transportation director that's been here for 32 years, and I've got a chief deputy director that's been around for about 24 years. So those people know a lot more about what happened in the past. Building was donated to us by Wilbur Hutchinson about 10 years ago when he developed cancer. He was a business professor at the university, so it's nice to have a donated building. We don't have to worry about rent or paying for the building. All we have to do is kind of worry about how to maintain it. And we received a grant from the Risto Fund when she passed away. That is the proceeds of that $400,000 has been helping us with our major repairs and a renovation to the front of the building and a roof and a new driveway. So we're a pretty healthy organization. We're healthy from the standpoint that as long as the government funds come, we can do the energy assistance and we can do the SHIP program. But it's a used to do senior meals, but we don't do those anymore. Mm-hmm. Bonner takes care of that. The Bonner trustee takes care of that in Portage. In Pines Village takes care of that here in Valparaiso. They both are able to make the hot meals and the people really want those more than the meals that are made somewhere else and then bussed in there.
Right.
So.
Well, it just sounds like just a lot of services that have come together over the decades here to help people out, in particular those seniors and others that don't have an opportunity or an easy way to get around. They need that help, to be sure, and that's what the agency's there to be able to help out. And obviously, this is a very important time of year as well, with Medicare open enrollment wrapping up here in December. And got to get the word out to let people know that if you need help in signing up, that you're there to help them out, right?
Yes, that's a big program for us right now. We have five certified counselors. They are all volunteers. So the number that they have people call in to the enrollment center is 464-1028, and you'll get asked to leave your message. And then one of the volunteers who is responsible that day calls you back and schedules an appointment for you. And they come in and meet with you at your best time frame. We have an office that's set up just for them in the building. And like you said, it's very critical at this time that the open enrollment. The one that I like that a lot of people are not aware of is the Part D assistance program, where you help people get into the right pharmacy program.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally shocked when I turned 65 4 years ago, and every year for the last 4 years, I've jumped to a different program, because that program, based upon the meds that you're on, they will save you money. I was on United the first year, and then I went to Anthem, and then I went to Cigna, and then I went to Magellan, and then I went to Express Scripts. And basically, one of the things we do is, if you're spending more than $1,000 on your meds, you ought to come in and let us plug the meds that you're in to the computer, because every one of them charges a different for a pill. You can be on Benicare, a heart pill,
yeah.
And one is charging $4, one's charging $3, one's charging $1.50. You'll get a printout of what your meds for the year will be. And literally, that first year, I saved $2,000. The second year, by changing, I went to save $400. And when I went to Magellan last year, I saved $200. And this year, I'm going to Express Scripts, and I'm going to save $200. So the last numbers are kind of small, but it's still $200 on my annual med bill. So I really encourage people, is if you're spending anything at all, especially if it's at least $1,000, make an appointment and come in. They're not selling you anything. There is no commission. All they do is they take a program that's on the computer already, And if you're computer savvy, you could do it yourself, but most seniors aren't. So you print it up and say, you know, here's what you can save if you, and the enrollment is done right there in the office. You go right to the computer and they plug you in. So that's one. There's other one that a lot of people don't know about, and that's the low-income subsidy. If you're on Medicare but you don't qualify for Medicaid, so in other words, if you're a single living on $1,377, you can get a full subsidy that will pay your Part D premium. Now, that doesn't sound like much. I mean, it's $100 a month, Part D. But if you're only living on, you know, $17,000, $100 a month is a lot of money that comes back into your account because they're not taking the Part D premium out of your Medicare,
right,
or your Social Security check.
Right.
The other one that a lot of people don't know is the Medicare Savings Program, and they can help with your Part B premium, your Part A deductible, Part B deductible, hospital deductible, and it's a simple one-page application that we help you fill it out. And once again, that's an income eligibility program. Mm-hmm. So if you're making a single person living on 1528, you can qualify for some benefits there. If you're an individual, making 1879, you can qualify for some other additional benefits. And those two programs are ones you never hear advertised, but they're really, a simple one-page application that our counselors can fill out and send it in. It takes a little bit of income verification so that they know, what you're dealing with.
Right.
But both of those programs can, the hospital Part D deductible can be like $1,316 if you have to go into the hospital, that you can avoid the deductible there if you're in that in income bracket. So I would suggest if you're over 65, you're low income, and you're not capable of not into that Medicare or bracket, at least let them run the numbers on you. And if you're on any number of meds, I'd let them run the RX program on you too, and make sure that you get in the right program.
Well, that's why the opportunity that you can take right now to talk with the SHIP counselor. SHIP, by the way, is short for State Health Insurance Assistance Program, which is a program. It's free and it's completely unbiased. They're just there to counsel people that need the help and get the advice that they need to save money and get signed up for the right kind of services here. We're talking with Bruce Lindner, who's the executive director of the Porter County Aging and Community Service Incorporated office in Valparaiso about the program. And Bruce, I understand that there are a couple opportunities coming up very soon here that you can make appointments to actually come in and see a counselor. One of them is going to be there in Valparaiso on Thursday the 30th, and then another one's coming up in Portage on December 4th.
Yes, well, we have our counselors here that make appointments all the time, but they're also going to be available at other locations as well. Once again, you'd call in on that number and tell them you want that appointment, and they'll schedule an appointment for you and meet them over there. So, the volunteers really take their job seriously and will drive and meet the people at their convenience at another location.
So in other words, too, if they happen to be in the area, perhaps you happen to live near, or you have friends to take you near to the Banta Senior Center in Valparaiso, which is a facility that's going to be available on the 30th, or the Bonner Senior Center in Portage on the 4th of December, you can do that, too. Or just give the office there on Campbell Street in Valparaiso a call, and you can set something up anytime, right?
That's correct.
That's great. That's great. What kind of response have you gotten from folks so far that have taken advantage of talking with the counselors? You've talked about your own personal experience in saving money on your prescription medications. What have some other folks that maybe have not thought about this in the past, they've taken advantage of talking with the counselors? What kind of response have you gotten back from any of them?
Well, most of them are delighted. I mean, you get this booklet that's got 200 pages in it sent mailed to you, and you can't make heads or tails out of it if you're a senior and you're not doing this. So they'll walk them through and help them understand the different options that they have for insurance programs as well. they even talked to them about Medicaid. They can field any number of questions, whether they're Medicare or Medicaid. They've been doing this for a number of years, especially Ginger, who is the coordinator for that program, and she is just unbelievable how much time she spends in. I haven't yet to find anybody that walked away and didn't feel like that the appointment was valuable and was helpful.
That is Bruce Lindner, who is Executive Director of Porter County Aging and Community Service. They are helping eligible seniors sign up for the 2018 Medicare benefits. The open enrollment period, by the way, ends on December 7th. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Both Hammond and Hobart had successfully launched campaigns to ask voters in their communities to support tax increases for future operational expenses and capital improvement programs. And Purdue University economist Larry DeBoer came on Regionally Speaking recently to talk about how Hammond and Hobart seemed to buck the trend by winning their first-time referenda campaigns.
May referenda held during the primary election in May, tend to pass much more frequently than referenda in November, and here they held them in November and passed them anyway. Let's see if I can give you the percentages here. I'm just looking at my screen, and it's about 73% passed in May, and about 50-50 in November, and so they managed. The other thing that kind of bucked the trends is when you try the first time. It's only been 50-50 on a first-time referendum over the 164 that we've looked at, whereas second-time referenda have been 81% passed, and if you've won before, it's 91% passed. Once you've won, you hardly ever lose again. So here we had a couple of pairs of referenda that passed despite the trend against the November and despite the trend making first-time referenda more difficult.
Now, I know that there were, I guess, three that were on the ballot across the state. The third one, which we haven't mentioned, is for a smaller school district in Indiana. We've, of course, been very closely watching the Hobart and the Hammond referenda questions in particular, and you have two in getting ready for the tally at the last election and back on Tuesday. And you may not necessarily keep track of what the questions are involved, but do you think that in this case that the Hobart questions and the Hammond questions were about the same as what many of the other school districts have asked for, the same type of things that they've been concerned about, or did they do something different, I believe, when they get to their voters in Hammond and Hobart this time?
Well, each one of them had a tax referendum, which is for general fund, and those have been quite common. In fact, we've had 164, it's been about half and half. Half of them asking for tax referenda, and half of them asking for general fund. Actually, we've had a little more of the tax referenda than we've had the capital project referenda over the years. Going for two at once is not terribly common. That's been tried 16 times so far, and more have passed than not. The one thing that stands out there is that it's always the case that they either both pass or they either both fail. We've never had a split decision on those dual referenda. So in those terms, I think it's basically asking for the sorts of things that other school corporations have asked for. I did notice that the combined tax rates that Hammond and Hobart asked for were really quite high. If you add up the two from Hobart, it's $1.05, and for Hammond was about 80 cents. And we've only actually, up until now, had only had five referenda with the rates and ask more than 70 cents. Mm-hmm. So those were really quite high. I know that, I guess it was Hobart, was advertising that some of their old bond issue taxes would be going off.
Yeah, that's right.
That may have made a difference.
Yeah, that was, I know, in particular, Superintendent Buffington, in talking about what the referenda questions were for the city of Hobart, talked about the fact that the bond issue for the Hobart High School should be finished up, and so that would not be a factor in adding more if they needed to add more to the bonding authority. And in Hammond, it was about the same, that they had whittled away in enough bonds over the years to be able to have a cushion there. One of the things I know that both of them, and in particular Superintendent Buffington, wanted to stress, because they called their campaign one that basically that denoted the concern about what's going to happen in 2020. Mm-hmm. And in particular, Superintendent Buffington was very careful to explain that to us when we talked with her before the election in great detail about the fact that we're going to find in certainly in Lake County, and I believe in St. Joseph County is the other county that is facing the same change in 2020. The property tax caps are going to change dramatically, and that will have a big effect on school districts and making sure that they have enough to operate with. And I know that's one of the concerns. Can you explain, from what you know about this, why 2020 is going to be such an important year?
Sure. You can look it up. It's in the Indiana Constitution, Article 10, Section 1, Section H. And what it was, if you may recall, we voted the tax caps into the Constitution in 2010. And what the tax caps do is to put a ceiling on the amount of property taxes that Indiana taxpayers can pay. Well, two of the counties in Indiana were going to get hit so hard with revenue losses due to those tax caps, because their tax rates were high, that they put a special clause in the Constitution that said that Lake and St. Joe counties, and they're not named by name, there's some conditions in there that only Lake and St. Joe qualified for, that for 10 years after 2010 up until the end of 2019-2020, the existing debt service tax rates wouldn't count for the tax rate that is limited by the tax caps. Well, that runs out at the end of 2019, and all of a sudden the tax rates that are eligible to be capped are going to go up. And I just tried to look, and this is a tricky calculation even for an informed layperson like myself, but it looks like rates could go up, but the eligible rates could go up 25, 50 cents, even a dollar in some of the places in Lake County, which could increase the amount of tax cap credits that taxpayers receive. And a tax cap credit is a portion of your tax bill that you don't pay because the rate has come in too high. The tax cap credits could increase, and that could cost revenue to quite a few of the local government units in Lake County. For May 2012, 42% of our referenda passed, and since then, 73% have passed. So what's the increase? And part of it is the economy improving, I'm sure. But surely some of it must be the increasing sophistication of the superintendents and the school boards in running their campaigns. The superintendents communicate with one another informally, no doubt, just talking over coffee when they meet each other. But also formally, you can be sure there are seminars at the superintendents meeting about how we did it. What is a successful strategy?
That's Purdue University agricultural economist Larry DeBoer. And it's time for Eye on the Arts today with John Cain of South Shore Arts.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts are David Lebarski and Eric Rolden of the Promise U Art House, which I just read about recently in one of our local papers.
Yes,
and
sir.
You guys have a new gallery in Highland.
That's right. That's right.
So how did it come about? It was a 1910 house, I believe.
Yeah, that's how the article started in the newspaper. So that gets everybody's attention, which is nice. And so 107-year-old home right in downtown Highland, and used to belong to, what's the name of the business, David?
Southside Bantam Meats Deli was right next door back a long time ago, and they actually owned the house as well. So they went back and forth between the business and the house and stored the meats underneath the garage. Actually, there was a cellar underneath
pretty
the garage.
Cool history. We still have to spell out for everybody. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the Lubarskis, David's family.
My dad, my mother, my brother, and my sister, as well as Eric and myself, we all kind of joined forces, brought our strengths to the table, and kind of converted this old house into something that the community could benefit from, a relaxing place to go view art.
That's the cool part about that. It's completely renovated on the inside. Not that much on the outside, so it still has that like charm of whatever's on the outside. You go indoors, and one person said it's like a uptown gallery, but in downtown Highland. A little tagline she made for us.
I like that.
So when you go in there, like, we haven't publicized a lot of photos of it because we still want people to experience that kind of feeling. So it does that. It's not us saying that. That's the reaction we get when people come in there.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Eric, you're an artist.
I am. David is as well.
Dave, you are as well. And Dave, are you part of the Unwanted?
No, I'm not. I've just been affiliated
You're
with
wanted,
them.
You're wanted, in other
words. Him and his band were extremely wanted by the Unwanted. We booked them. We booked them for a couple shows. That's how David and I met and got to know each other. Just, you know, artistic theoretics kind of thing. Started from there. Philosophical stuff. Mm-hmm. And then just spent a lot of time together. He asked me to be a part of what his family had coming up. That's how we got in these chairs right now.
So. Well, so tell me, what might I find if I come visit you? At the and I want to find out what promise you means too.
Right. When you come there, the thing that we've heard a lot from other people that come in is that there's a really good variety of unique things there. It has a really great range of mediums and styles, and so I think that offers, you know, it's not just a pigeonholed type of art gallery where you go there for one specific thing. It's got a really nice variety of things. I think that adds to the community aspect as well.
We started with 7 artists, and by word of mouth, it's turned into 30 plus.
Mm-hmm.
And so curating that amount of work is a nice challenge to have, because
definitely.
When we've been told that it's done well, we take that to heart a lot. That's a big responsibility for us to pull that off. And so when we feel like we've done a good job, the house flows, because that's the main purpose. It's a low-key, blue-collar approach. It is all fine art.
Mm-hmm.
We're not lowbrowing anybody or anything.
Uh-huh.
But it's the introduction to it that gets people kind of at ease in there. So an easier way to access fine art is what we're.
First big show, right?
That's there. Right. With Randy Bavala.
Randy Bavala is in your guys' salon show right now.
Okay.
He won an award there. Mm-hmm. He got my attention 2 years ago. Took me 2 years to catch him. And now we have a place to put his work. So the three of us got together and curated his exhibit. We all have, pretty similar folks, I think, the three of us. So got to know each other just as buddies, guys hanging out, who can talk about the depths of each other's art making.
So the shows are going to be one artist, two artist shows, whatever you want it to be.
Yes.
And then are you also going to be showing a mix of a bunch of artists?
Yeah,
sometimes?
We have a... the whole house is pretty much before we started the solo show, it was a big spill room of art where it just had art from all different types of artists, kind of like a community setup. But eventually we'll have group shows or theme shows. We have a big list of things that we're going to try.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So about the promise you, I think that's important. So if you could think of it as like an umbrella concept for what we're calling artistic support. So a 360 rotation of support. So we'll be trying to sell the artist's work as a support system for that. The artist will come to the house and participate in the venues as access to the community.
Mm-hmm.
That's a small idea of what we're going to try to expand over and over again. So with the solo exhibit, it was a communication between the three of us talking about what Randy's art meant and then trying to relay that feeling. We're going to have a closing exhibit Friday, December 1st. It's in three parts. So the first hour is going to be a talk about naming your work. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, artists out there, David, who's very good at it, and Randy, who's excellent at it, are going to have that discussion. We'll break, we'll come back, we'll talk about what fatherhood means to the art-making process.
Mm-hmm.
We'll break and come back and close out with what music means to your art-making process.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Maybe three different audiences, maybe the same person wants to stay for all 3 hours, but we're going to explode in the entire conversation.
And what time is that going to take place?
That's going to be December 1st, Friday, from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock at the Promise
Your
House.
That's coming right up.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm so glad. I mean, you guys are such great examples of the kind of grassroots things that are going on with the arts in our region, and that's really important because we're not Chicago.
Right. That's a big
but
deal.
We're we can be very authentic to what we have, and we have a lot of talent here, so that's fantastic.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
And if you missed the entire conversation, you can check it out as well on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for being with us. Back with you tomorrow.